It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be with you today. Well, welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is how technology will impact coaches and clients. And we're going to have a conversation as we attempt to predict how technology will impact coaching in terms of both the coach and the client. You know, the question is not if, but how will things change from organizational structures to relationships to how we collaborate. Well, I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, www.thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, before we get into today's show, let me give you a little tease for next week's show. Next week, our topic is when your relationships work, your world works. And that's with Cynthia and David Darst, coaches extraordinary. They say that in business, it's easy to focus mainly on the bottom line and results, often ignoring or bulldozing our co-workers or employees in the process. That might work in the short term, but it'll never offer long-term success. So when we make sure that our relationships are aligned, then work becomes easier, more effective and fun, and almost always boosts the bottom line. So join Cynthia and David for some tips and ideas that you'll be able to use right away. Hey, that's going to be a great show. They're going to be here with us in the studio next Thursday on the, let's see, what is that? That is the 12th. And right after the show, they're going to go across the street to the Wyndham Hotel in Costa Mesa, where they will be speaking at the February ICF Orange County chapter meeting. And their topic there is for Valentine's Day special, building stronger relationships from the boardroom to the bedroom. Can't wait to hear that one. Well, look, let's get started with today's show. As I said earlier, our topic for today is how technology will impact coaches and clients. Let me start it on this topic is two books that I've been reading this last week. And let me give you the name of those two books right now. We'll put them up on the podcast also so you can get them. And I'll probably mention them again in the show. But the first was a book titled Bold, B-O-L-D, by Peter Diamonds and Stephen Kotler. And the second is Reinventing Organizations by Frederick Laloux, L-A-L-O-U-X. Now, I normally would have finished both of these books prior to this show using a method that I picked up a number of years ago from a friend of mine on how to read a book in one day. However, both of these books were just too compelling for me to be able to skim them, and instead they forced me to really focus on what I was reading and also to take breaks to let the ideas sort of percolate in my brain as I tried to figure out if I believed what the authors were saying, and if so, then how would what they're talking about apply to the world of coaching and business? So let me start by clarifying that the technology that I'm referring to today is not a new phone or a new tablet or a faster computer, but I'm talking about technology that will fundamentally change the way we think or interact with others. And frankly, that's the connection between these two very different books. Bold talks about technology, and Reinventing Organization talks about, guess what, the impact of organizational structures based upon the impact of technology. Well, let's kind of talk about Bold first. You know, Bold is all about what Diamond talks about is exponential technology. Now, he defines that this way. He says, unlike the plus one progression of linear growth, where one becomes two, becomes three, becomes four, and so forth, exponential growth is a compound doubling. That's where one becomes two, two becomes four becomes eight, and so on. And this is the problem. This doubling is unusually deceptive. He gives this example. He says, if I took 30 large linear steps, say 3 feet, from my living room, I would end up 30 meters away or roughly across the street. Where if alternatively, he says, I took 30 exponential steps from the same starting point, I would end up a billion meters away or orbiting the Earth 26 times. So there you go. There's the difference between a linear progression and an exponential progression. Are we going across the street or are we going to orbit the world, the Earth, 26 times? Well, to deal with this, Diamonds has sort of developed a framework that he calls the 6 Ds of exponentials. And they are digitalization, deception, disruption, demonetization, dematerialization, and democratization. And these 6 Ds, as he refers to them, are a chain reaction of technology progressions. They're a roadmap of rapid development that always leads to enormous upheaval and opportunity. Well, I'm going to leave the definition of these different stages to you, the audience, to read the book. I don't want to take away from the author here. I'm really trying to sort of whet your appetite and give you enough information from the book to, one, to encourage you to run out and buy it. And you can buy the paperback, the hardback, or if you're like me, you can get the electronic version. Well, the book Bold goes on to give many real-life examples of the impact of these kinds of exponential technology. The point he makes is that the time to be aware of these changes is not when the technology is first introduced, but instead it's when, as he puts it, an elegant and robust user interface has been developed that will allow the common user to take advantage of the technology. You know, and he uses many examples in his book. These examples are to talk about the fact that the impact of technology on society in general isn't when it's invented. It's when the invention, the technology itself, has been developed to the stage where people can pick it up and use it. You know, if we go back, I mean, computers, we had computers many, many years ago. We had the ability to program at the same time. But, you know, if you wanted to program something in a computer, that wasn't an easy task. That took maybe professional training. It took a lot of hard study. Were you going to use BASIC or Fortran? Nobody even knows what those words are anymore. Whereas, as time went on, all of a sudden, the ability to program that computer to get it to do what you wanted became really easy through the development of elegant and robust user interface. A best example that I can think of right now is apps. Almost anybody and everybody creates a custom app to use on their phone or their iPad. So the technology breakthrough might have been the cell phone, might have been the tablet, but what really had it impacting the world was the development of the user interface, so let's call it the apps, that allowed people to utilize that technology in ways that maybe the inventors of the technology never really even thought about it. Well, Diamond goes on to identify, before I get to that, let me just say that the book Bold is broken into a couple of segments. It's part of it is really to talk about what is exponential technology. What does that really mean? Part of it is to develop leading indicators that would allow you to identify when something has reached that point that you should really get on board with it. And he identifies some areas that he says are the key for future growth. I've just sort of pulled out 5 of them. He says networks and sensors. Number 2 is infinite computing. And what he's talking about is the use of brute force there. He says the ongoing progression of computing from a scarce and expensive resource towards one that's plentiful and free. And what he talks about is that if we go back in time, the ability to use the computer to solve a scientific or a mathematical problem was limited to a handful of geographic locations on the planet. And if you weren't fortunate enough to be able to get into MIT or IBM or one of the other think tanks and get on their big, huge computers to run your problem through it, then you were out of luck. You, even though the technology was there, you didn't have the ability to take advantage of it. Whereas today, the exponential technological change is that we have got cell phones that have more computing power than our computers did, for a lot of years. And we have got the ability to daisy chain. We've got the ability to link in through the internet and to get the advantage of thousands of computers. And basically what he's talking is the beauty of brute force. The third area that he identifies as an area for technological growth is artificial intelligence. What he talks about there is that artificial intelligence, he refers to it as expertise on demand. That as it's developing, as it's becoming not a toy anymore, that what it really is it's a way for us to get answers almost immediately, on demand. He talks about robotics, which he claims is going to be our new workforce. And he takes us through the history of robotics. And in the book, he talks about the factories that used robotics, but humans were not allowed in these factories because it was just too dangerous. These great big machines that many of them were set up in place with fences or barriers around them so that you didn't get near them and couldn't get hurt. Well, today, our robotic workforce can be as big as a chess piece. We're talking about robotics that have the ability to do things that humans can do, or instead of humans doing them, in an environment that's completely safe for the coexistence of both the human and the robotic. The last area that he talks about is synthetic biology. And he's really talking about the fact that now everything that we manufacture industrial, he's claiming, will eventually be able to assemble biologically. And frankly, that one is so mind-boggling, I just don't even want to begin to go into that. You know, I was kind of curious as I read through his list of areas for, he thought, opportunities for exponential technological growth. I picked up an article that was from Inc. magazine, and they listed their list of industries that they said were the industries for growth as we go forward. And they listed seven of them. First was food e-commerce, gamification software, agricultural software, relaxation beverages, public sector technology, family sports services, and yoga and Pilates. Now, my curiosity was there any correlation between these two lists, between those industries that Inc. is identifying as the growth industries and those technological opportunities that Diamonds is identifying as those places where we're going to see that doubling, that quadrupling of growth that is going to be exponential and create huge opportunities? Well, actually, as I compared the two lists and as I researched it further, most of the industries that Inc. listed are, in fact, on the verge of exponential technological breakthroughs. The one that didn't seem to fit, and I haven't really come to grips with it yet, is yoga and Pilates. I really was kind of at a loss as to how that one was going to be impacted. There may be a way, and I just haven't seen it. And you know, that is one of the key points that the author really makes in the book Bold. And that is that these opportunities are not easy to spot. And he gives many examples of companies that, you know, and they're companies that we've all heard of that have just completely missed the boat. One of the examples he talks about in the book at length is Kodak, and how Kodak was on the cutting edge of technology in terms of their cameras and in terms of their film processing, and that it wasn't that they didn't know about digital cameras. They knew about them maybe before the rest of the world knew about them, but they looked at it and they really couldn't identify it as having a commercial application. They didn't see the benefit to it. And as a result, they ignored it. And so look what happened. They completely lost out. They fell behind and they eventually disappeared. So we're talking about going beyond being inventive, which I think is a capability that is reserved for only a handful of you, to the rest of us learning how to look and identify when things are happening around us in the area of technology that are just emerging to where they are ready for practical application. They're ready to be applied in ways that maybe the inventors of the technology never really thought about. Diamond refers to Google's 8 innovative principles. I have not run into these anyplace else, so it's kind of interesting to me to find them in this book, and I thought I'd just share those with you. These are 8 steps that he says you have to learn to look at and be cognizant of if you are going to identify opportunities for innovation or opportunities to take advantage of technology about to break through. Number one is focus on the user, not on the technology, but focus on the user and what the user really wants. And again, I'll just reference it rather than tell the whole story. It goes back to Kodak and talks about Kodak didn't focus on what the user wanted. The user wasn't interested in film, in developing, and how it fit into the camera, and how it fit into Kodak's assembly line and patents. The person taking a picture, the user, was interested in how quick can I see a picture of what I just took and share it with people. And with that user's goal in mind, my guess is Kodak's look at digital filmmaking would have completely changed their opinion. The number two innovative process is to share everything. And in Google's words, it says, in a hyper-connected world with massive amounts of cognitive surplus, it's critical to be open, to allow the crowd to help you innovate, and to build on each other's ideas. You know, this is where the internet has had such a huge impact on us. When we started with the internet, it was fascinating as a toy. It was fascinating to be able to write messages rather than send a letter and wait days for replies. It was fascinating to be able to have message talks rather than get on the phone. Not that one was better than the other. It was just a new way of doing it. But the internet today has developed into a system for sharing and making all world knowledge and information available to anybody and everybody on demand whenever you want it. You know, I can think of many business cases early in my career where I would go to the library to get information. I didn't have either in my reference library or in the company's reference library, I didn't have the resources that I needed to check into a particular subject. So it was get in the car and go down to the library. And then it was only to find out that the public library may not have been as up to date as I wanted. So it was a matter of how do I get into the university library, which maybe had more up to date information. Today, I can't think of a situation where I would go to the library to look something up. I am spending all kinds of time on the internet looking up anything and everything, from casual information as to who was that person that was in tonight's TV show, or the answer to the question at dinner about what was the name of that movie that had this movie star in it, or a business question that might be, how many people in this geographic area fit the income age profile of people that would buy our product or services? All of that available. And the reason it's available is because of this second principle of Google: share everything in this world. Look for ideas everywhere is the third. The principle that crowdsourcing can provide you with incredible ideas, insights, products, and services. You know, if you're not familiar with crowdsourcing, these two books do a great job of talking about crowdsourcing. What it means, how it's being used to raise money, how it's being used to share ideas, how it's being used to bring products to market in a quicker, more accelerated fashion than ever before. So that's another way. Think big, but start small. You can start a company one day that affects a small group, but aim to positively impact a billion people within a decade. You know, I can remember the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, when I first picked it up, and there was an example in there about the author talking about he had an idea for doing T-shirts, but he didn't have the money to invest in going out and doing the design and finding the manufacturer to make the T-shirts and warehousing the T-shirts and finding a brick-and-mortar location to sell the T-shirts. So what he did is he did a graphic design of his T-shirts. He worked up a ad. He put it on the internet. He offered them for sale to see if anybody was interested in buying them. And then as he got the orders on the internet, then he went out and he found the manufacturer to make the orders, to make the product, to fulfill the orders that he'd already received. Thinking big about having a huge business, but starting small. The fifth principle here is never fail to fail. And what we're talking about is the importance of what he calls rapid iteration. Fail frequently, fail first, and fail forward. If you aren't trying, if you aren't stretching, you aren't going to hit the home run. If you never swing, you're never going to get on base. So never fail to fail, you know. Spark with imagination, fuel with data. I like that one. That's number six on the list. Spark with imagination, fuel with data. He's talking about agility, nimbleness, the key discriminator against the large and the linear. You know, agility requires lots of access to new and often wild ideas, lots of good data to separate the worthwhile from the woolly. And for certain, the most successful startups today are data-driven. They measure everything. They use machine learning and logarithms to help them analyze the data to make decisions. You cannot pick up a magazine in the last couple of months that doesn't have a story on it about big data. Again, the information is out there. The question now becomes not can I find out, not is the answer to my question out there. The issue is, how do I frame my question in a way that I can sift through the massive amount of answers to get the one to my question? So that's what they're talking about there. Be a platform is number seven. Look at the most successful companies getting billion-dollar valuations. They're all platform players. And what he talks about there is companies that basically are started in the air. Companies that no longer require huge capital investments, real estate, significant investments in people. He talks about Uber. He talks about Instagram. Instagram started out with a handful of people. It was nothing. It was an idea. There was no huge investment in plant and equipment. There was no huge investment in offices. There was a small handful of people. Started Instagram, got it going, sold it for millions of dollars, kept it going. Ultimately, the last time I think it sold for billions of dollars for Instagram, along with the 13 employees that worked for it. So, you know, have a mission that matters. He says most important is the company you're starting built upon a massively transformative purpose. You know, what he's talking about is passion. Is there a real purpose to what you're doing? Is it going to appeal to other people? You know, I'm getting our announcer, our producer waving at me going, hey, internet radio, He started it right here. He has a passion for it, you know, and other people had a passion for it. So they jumped on the bandwagon. He didn't have to be first. He's certainly not going to be last, but it's what you do with it. You know, at this point, as I was reading through the book on Bold, I began to wonder about the impact that this exponential technology would have on the way we work and organize. And as luck would have it, I was talking to my coach, who suggested that I read a book called Reinventing Organizations. So I did. But before we leave Bold, I want to just give you one last encouragement to read this book. I have not done justice to the small portion of the book that we've discussed today. And I haven't even mentioned the balance of the book, which I frankly am still reading and will continue to read. But I couldn't wait to share this with you. And we're kind of booked up with guests as we go forward. So I wanted to get on and cover as much as I could today. So I want to talk about the other book, Reinventing Organizations, which I think is the flip side of this technology breakthrough. But we'll come right back after a commercial.